So we're launching into local news and features, and this is for the 12th of June 2025, and it's Tim and Liz kicking everything off. We're in batch number one. What I'm going to do is we're going to have the headlines for the first four stories, and then Liz is going to reveal her one and only quiz questions. So my headlines coming up are exciting vision unveiled for derelict Stoke-on-Trent land, and Pride leaders demand Reform UK apology as Staffordshire funding row breaks out. And Leslie's headlines are
something old, something new. This is an article by Paul Williams, and both of my stories are to do with celebrating Stoke's 100 year birthday as a city, and my other story is 1925 and all that. So that those are going to be my
excellent
stories.
And before we go into those, we have the quiz questions for Liz's one and only quiz. So here we go.
Number one, which is the most frequently broken bone in the human body? Number two, what vegetable is a major ingredient of an Asian de piazza dish? Number three, what robust but flexible wood is used by Fender to make guitars and by Morgan to produce sports cars frames? Number four, according to the poet Keats, which biblical character stood in tears amid the alien corn? Number five, which creatures make up one-fifth of mammal species? So all mammals, which creatures of all mammals a fifth of, in number of the total. Number six, at 410 miles, what is the UK's longest road? Number seven, which band did Quincy Jones call the worst musicians in the world? Number eight, which main river runs through the city of Baghdad? Number nine, in astronomy, which constellation is famous for both its belt and its sword? Number 10. The majority of the steerage, or what you call third-class passengers, on the Titanic were of what nationality? So that's the poorest class. What was the majority? What were their nationality? Bonus. Which admission of humility attributed to the 16th century preacher John Bradford begins, "There but for the grace of God"? So could you fill in the missing words? And that's my quiz.
Wonderful stuff. Well, many thanks for that. Have a little ponder on those questions, and we will reveal all in a later batch. So I'm going to read the first news story for you now, which is exciting vision is unveiled for derelict Stoke-on-Trent land. Plans to transform the site of a former sheltered housing complex into new apartment blocks have gone on to show three low-rise blocks as proposed by the council-owned land in Tunstall, previously occupied by Lily Gertrude Sims de Court. All residents were ordered out of the sheltered housing complex before the units were later used to house rough sleepers during the coronavirus pandemic. The site was demolished in 2023. Stoke-on-Trent City Council has now unveiled plans to redevelop the land at Wesley Street to create 14 one-bedroom apartments. A public engagement event was held at Tunstall Town Hall over the weekend, with residents having their say on the proposals now until June the 11th. Visitors had the opportunity to see the artist's impressions of the proposed development, as well as a short video giving a 3D view. A planning application is due to be submitted in the coming weeks, and if permission is granted, work could actually begin in spring 2026. An information leaflet at the event said each apartment will be self-contained with its own external entrance and the blocks will have no communal areas. The landscaping of the site will complement the development and parking spaces will be included for residents. A total of 14 spaces will be created. Over the last 5 years, the provision of older persons' accommodation has increased in the city with the development of the Queen Elizabeth II Court, Rialto Court, and more recently Chatterley Court. These purpose-built buildings much better suit the needs of ageing residents in the city. There is, however, a need for one-bedroom properties in the city, and this site will allow us to deliver those. The properties will be allocated to applicants from the council's housing register in line with the housing allocations policy. The total cost will not be known until a firm design has been approved and a contractor procured. This will be paid for by the Housing Revenue Account Capital Programme, and hopefully there'll be grant funding from Homes England. So over to Liz, who's going to do the first story about the centenary of Stoke-on-Trent in batch number one.
Okay, this is My View by Paul Williams. So it's written in the first person and it's by Paul Williams. So when I say my anything, me or I mean him. And he is Stoke Creates board member. And he came to the city as a student, but he now calls Stoke his home. He says Stoke-on-Trent's past is key to its future. And the article is entitled Something Old, Something New. 6 months ago, Claybody Theatre's Hootenanny Party rang in Stoke-on-Trent's centenary year of civic, cultural and community celebrations by asking, is there a better place to be now? As the 100th birthday celebrations continue to build on the city's cultural renaissance over the past decade, which has seen a growth in confidence, ambition, creativity and cultural engagement, this extraordinary year of opportunity must look beyond 2025 and to the legacy that follows. It's almost 40 years since I first arrived as a student in the city that owed its globally renowned success to a mixture of geographical good fortune and homegrown entrepreneurial nous. At that time, my own knowledge of this rugged pot-making spot of earth, as Josiah Wedgwood called it, was formed through football, music and beer experiences. Cold Saturday visits to the old Victoria ground to watch my beloved hometown team Everton in December 1980 and October 1981 weren't exactly joyous occasions, with a draw and a defeat respectively not the results I was hoping for. That said, I did get the chance to see the immensely talented Paul Bracewell play on both occasions for Stoke City before making the switch to Goodison Park, where he was instrumental in Everton's trophy-winning team of the later 1980s. More enjoyable were subsequent visits to the Victoria Hall to watch U2's Bono wave an emblematic white flag on their war tour, and the Smiths, during the week their debut album was released. And I can still hear the now sadly departed Mike Peters from belt out 68 guns in the iconic King's Hall in May 1985. It was during another visit to this historic venue later that same year, the 5th Stoke Beer Festival, hosted by the Campaign for Real Ale, that I can vividly recall my younger brother, who was studying geography at North Staffordshire Polytechnic, point out the hall's strikingly ornate ceiling. Little did I know then the significance of this impressive Grade 2 listed Victorian building's place in the city's centenary annals. And I must confess, King George V's famous reference to this place that has such a great artistic and industrial mix of talent and fortitude, when he unexpectedly conferred city status on Stoke-on-Trent at the King's Hall back in 1925, was not the impression of the city I had when I first came here to study in a stormy 1987. Throughout my time as a student and subsequently teaching at both Stoke-on-Trent College and the University of Staffordshire, it soon became clear that this place I now call home was one of the crucibles of the Industrial Revolution. As the then Prince Charles proudly remarked during one of his visits to Middleport Pottery, Stoke-on-Trent is the cradle of the British ceramics industry, and the contribution made to this country by the potteries has been enormous. I arrived for my first year as a student at the Poly when Stoke-on-Trent was still basking in the nation's media spotlight, having attracted over 2 million visitors to its spectacular National Garden Festival on land reclaimed from the former Shelton Bar Steelworks. Having previously applied for and been denied both an enterprise zone and designation as an assisted area, the 1986 National Garden Festival, promoted as the biggest leisure event in Europe, showcased a new way of thinking about the meaning and purpose of urban space in the deindustrializing Potteries. Building on the region's industrial heritage, the National Garden Festival celebrated the fusion of art and industry as a springboard for the public-private sector development of Festival Park. It also sowed the seeds for marketing Stoke-on-Trent as a tourist destination, with the city subsequently being at the vanguard of developing a ceramics-led cultural and tourism movement. I was intrigued to find out that the distinguished effigy of the Queen's head used on the set of National Garden Festival commemorative postage stamps issued by the post office was designed by Arnold Machin. Born in Stoke-on-Trent in 1911, the year after the federation of the six contiguous pottery towns, Machin's iconic design was used on all British stamps and coins from 1967 until the late Queen's death in 2022, making it the most reproduced piece of artwork of all time. Still described on Ordnance Survey maps as the Potteries, Stoke-on-Trent's renown as the UK's foremost industrial and creative ceramics district, and the impact it once had around the world, with its name proudly stamped on the back of almost every teacup, saucer and plate produced, remain powerful tourist lodestones in this year of centenary celebration. Indeed, industrial heritage and contemporary ceramics continue to be key draw cards used to attract visitors to a destination described by a former university colleague as a palimpsest, a city in which the old and new mingle, and the eye of the discerning tourist can seek out a host of unpredictable pleasures. Like the Garden Festival before it, the pro-growth concept of a cultural quarter, first proposed in a 1990s report, A Cultural Strategy for Stoke-on-Trent, was met with a mix of cynicism and excitement. And yet, that has been described as arguably the most important development since the title and status of city was first conferred 100 years ago.